Hey, welcome back to Armor God Catholic Radio. This is Tom McNew. I appreciate everybody joining us here. And this afternoon, we're visiting with Mr. Mike Peterson, who's a parishioner at Christ the King in Belton. Mike is also the author of a very unique book that I think I encourage everyone to get a copy of. Some of y'all will recognize this book. It's called Mary's Stories. We're going to get into the insight into the book and the origin story, which I'm sure is going to be riveting, and Mike's inspiration for writing in the first place. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
So, give our 2.4 million listeners a little thumbnail sketch about you and your background.
Okay, me and my background. Cradle Catholic, moved down here from DFW about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Moved down to Texas from Oregon, where I was born, after being married to my wife. When we got serious, she had a couple questions. Are you okay with adoption? Are you okay with moving to Texas? So
important questions.
We know where things are now. Been down, here though in the Belton area for about 5-6 years now.
Okay. So let's just jump in here and let's talk about Mary's story. So
yeah.
A little bit of the why did you decide to write this book?
Yeah, I didn't decide to. I couldn't not. So I've got a...
It's an interesting turn of phrase.
Yeah. I've got a terrible affliction where I get things stuck in my head and I can't get them out of my head until I write them. I hate the process of writing. I hate the process of publication even more. But no, it was one of those things where this started out with a couple of vague ideas many, many, many years ago. And eventually they started to just kind of coalesce. The first story in the book, I think I wrote without any concept of what was happening. Then, I spent more time, in prayer, and I knew the title of all of the stories and what order they were going to be in before I even wrote any of the others. And it was a process of getting my brain and myself in the right space and getting enough time to pray to get my ears on right and just start writing.
So I think many of us are familiar with the stories that are in here.
I'm using
air quotes, right? Familiar with the stories because they're all biblical.
Yeah. Well, right? Yes. Yeah, so about half of them are in the Bible and half of them are not.
Right.
But they're all going to have the ring of truth to them. Everyone that reads them says about the same thing. They all say, well, shoot, if it didn't happen exactly like that, it certainly happened really close to that. All the key points are definitely in the right order.
And that's, I think, what is so really interesting is, the wedding at Cana. We're all very familiar with the story.
Right.
We may not always be familiar with the context or the meaning behind it.
Sure.
And that's a conversation for later. Mm-hmm. But writing these stories from our Blessed Mother's perspective, describe that process. Was that daunting? Did it just kind of come?
Sure. Well, let's start with the basic premise, right? So
yeah.
The basic premise of the book is that decades after everything in the Bible, this town in Judea is having this end of season get-together, right? And cooking fires turn to campfires, and one in particular grows larger and larger and larger. Mm-hmm. And finally, somebody turns to this old woman by the fire and says, well, Mary, tell us a story about Jesus that we don't know. And so the book is the 9 stories told around the fire that evening, right?
Okay.
It's good context for the way that you're discussing it, right? So the book, about, like I said, about half the stories are in the Bible, and half the stories are not in the Bible, precisely, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're all told from Mary's perspective, which is very different than the perspective of the gospel writers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you talk about things like the wedding in Cana, the gospel writers are talking about, well, here's Jesus and he's doing this miracle and everything else. And, when it's told around the campfire, there's a little bit of twist on that story in particular, right?
Yeah.
But when the story is told around the campfire, it's not told around, from the perspective of this is the start of Jesus's ministry. Everyone knew that part by that point.
Mm-hmm.
It was told from the perspective of this is what Jesus thought of his mom and what he thinks of his dad, this is what he's like to hang out with. One of the things that's interesting in the book is that when you there one thing I can guarantee is that it will permanently change the perspective that you have on the Holy Family. Yeah. It will make them very real people who you feel like you know, who you feel like you're interacting with. Well, because you see them in their daily life. So you don't just see Jesus doing miracles and Mary being, you know, contemplative and Joseph being an ambiguous carpenter who's also there. You see Mary as this lady who's able to flip between being incredibly pensive and quiet to being a force of nature who you do not want to cross. And you see, you know, Jesus as a kid who, you know, liked pulling pranks on friends and family and was, you know, had clever ideas to do stuff together with people and stories where...
was an actual kid.
Yeah, he was an actual kid. He liked wood carving because he was spending all the time in his, you know, the shop with his dad. And you see Joseph who, man, let me tell you, I had a particular devotion for Joseph in the first place. But man, when you start to realize that he was the one flawed dude in a family full of perfect people. I mean, you know, like at home.
What pressure.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm sitting around, you know, in the house with my wife and my kids, you know, I can sit there and I think, oh man, I wish they would just figure it out. And in the Joseph's case, if something was wrong, he knew it was his fault. You know, and not only did he know it was his fault, but he knew that he had been put there to be Jesus's foster father by God, the Father himself. No pressure or anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's a guy who knows that if something's wrong, it's his fault. Also, he's standing in the earthly place of God the Father. Good luck to him. I mean, you know, just like he's us in the Holy Family. You know, we in our faith, we sit there and we think about, gosh, you know, God might not care for me because I just screwed up and I did this or I did that or I've done this in the past or this is my background or this is what's happened to me. And the reality is, holy crap, he had to accept Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to accept Joseph for arguably one of the most important roles in the Holy Family.
Yeah.
You know, you say, well, Jesus was the most important. Well, not when he was an infant.
Yeah.
You know, not when he was,
traveling to Egypt.
Yeah, not when he's taking his whole family over to Egypt and then back. Mm-hmm. You know, poor Joseph. You know, every time he gets a business set up, God tells him to move countries. Can't even be down the street or to a nearby city. It's, you know, it's like, oh, no. You're going to move to an entirely different part of the world.
Yeah.
You know, but the stories really make that all very real. The stories all take it and they make the real lives of the Holy Family a real and relatable thing that you go, oh my gosh, no, I mean, I know these people so much better now.
Yeah.
And it's probably somewhat apocryphal to say, but I mean, in a lot of ways, sometimes, you know, when I'm sitting in mass and I hear the stories, I sit there and I go, wow, that feels a lot more flat if I didn't have Mary's perspective on some of this, you know?
Yeah, sure.
You know, it just brings a lot of life.
Without being a spoiler, because I really want everybody to go out and find this
book.
We could
spoil a little bit at least, yeah.
But I love the story about, Jesus being lost, using air quotes, lost in the temple. And the context that you have put, and again... just so we're clear, there's some poetic license,
yes,
and I get
absolutely.
It, and you're not trying to hide that by any stretch of the imagination, but I love the insight into Joseph's mind. You know, he's focused on being one of the men as part of this clan, this tribe, who's just trying to get from point A to point B. He's being the carpenter that he is for the village by fixing a wheel. And then at the point where they suddenly realize, oh my gosh, I've lost the Savior of the world. That context of the insight that you've provided for us, you know, where he makes these half-hearted, kind of snarky little comments.
Joseph
about,
is so rough on himself,
Lord,
sometimes in the
you know?
Book.
Yeah. Thanks, God. Gave me a great responsibility, and I've lost the king of the world.
Yeah. I think in that when he says something along the lines of like, because he's constantly making side comments to himself from God's perspective, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I gave you the Messiah. I'm, you know, asked you to keep him. What do you mean you lost him in a near far off city for 3 days? Like, what are you talking about?
Left him?
Yeah, he got bitten by a snake. How exactly? Yeah. Like, what is the deal here? That's a really good story. A really good example, though, of like the whole Mary's perspective, right? Because in the Gospels, what we hear is they go up to Jerusalem for Passover, and when they're on their way home, 3 days later, they realize, oh, we don't have Jesus. And you go, huh, yeah. Well, there's a bit of story missing there. Like, there's, what the heck?
Yeah.
And it's a really good example of the whole Mary's perspective brings it, like, brings back. So, you know,
Well, it's interesting that the gospel's like, okay, we're traveling, we lost him, and then bang, the very next verse, we're back in the temple.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a temple. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, you traveled for a day and a half.
How'd you find him?
And then
him?
Turned around and tried to, would you like pull a Padre Pio and like.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you do exactly? No, it's a great example of the Mary's story being, Mary's perspective rather, being different than the gospel writers, right? So, you know, in Mary's perspective, she sits there and she says, every summer or every year for Passover, I loved traveling up to Jerusalem with the whole town. We'd all go up. The whole town needed to go up to Jerusalem. We'd all travel together. It was a week of walking and talking, and you get to see friends you haven't gotten to talk to in a long time, meet new friends, and you know, you're eating with this family, and meanwhile everyone else in your family is with other different people, and you're constantly in different places cooking for different people, and it's a living village that's traveling together. And we go up, and we see Joseph's family for Passover, and then we're, you know, on the way home, you know, in the story, you know, I can give a little bit more spoilers, right? You know, on the way home, you know, Mary needed some extra help packing. So she had a daughter from a family across the street, right? And it's not like that daughter got to go back to her family before they knew they needed to start moving, right? Yeah, so they all just, she knew that anywhere that Jesus was, that somebody else would be doing the same thing for her kid. So they start moving, and, you know, it wasn't unusual to not see somebody for a day or so. And then, you know, you about the second day, she's like, well, it's a little weird that I haven't seen Jesus, and talks to Joseph. And he's like, well, you know, maybe we should figure this out. And by the day three, they're going, yeah, we got to figure out what the heck we're doing. And Joseph's like, I got to figure out how to get a horse. And, you know, they're off. And then they're caught in a sandstorm, you know. And, I mean, you really think about it. If it was 3 days out of Jerusalem before they realized they didn't have Jesus, even if they sped back, and then they had to look for the kid.
They had to figure out where he was.
You're talking about a week not knowing where your kids are.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's some of that is the, some of that extra, that's Mary's perspective, is this whole, like, there is more to the story than just what's in the Gospels. Mm-hmm. What's in the Gospels is absolutely true, but it doesn't tell us everything. There's plenty of times that we talk, in our faith, we have arguments all the time where it's like, I wish Jesus had actually just mentioned a little bit more about this one particular point. And, you know, it's... And obviously, this isn't gospel. It's not Mary's the gospel according to Mary or anything else like that. But but Mary's stories end up filling in a lot of that and bringing a lot of life to.
That's exactly right. It's that life. It's the characterization. You know, I think, and you hit it on your head earlier when you said, you know, so often we get this idea of our Blessed Mother being this quiet, kind of pensive, pondering, you know, contemplative woman, and she certainly was.
Sure.
And I'm not taking that away. And as you said, this isn't the Gospel of Mike Peterson or Gospel of Mary. You know,
we're not at all.
It's not intended to replace Scripture by any stretch.
Not in any way.
I want to make that clear. But it does give us. You know, it rounds out the Holy Family. You know?
No, it's good. They're gonna, by the end of the book, they are very real people that you are very close to and you like. On the cross, Jesus says to John, "If I'm your brother, she's your mother," and John takes her into his house.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the book, you've got a very real sense of not just the relationship between Jesus, Joseph, and Mary, but also how, as Jesus' brother, she is 100% your mother, and she's somebody you feel like you know and you care for in a very real and concrete way, and not just in the abstract way that we usually get from church.
How long did it take you to write this book?
Way the heck too long. way the heck too long.
Follow up.
I can give you exact dates.
Yeah.
So in my introduction, all my books for the last, actually, I think for all of my books ever, I've put in when I started them and when I finished them.
Yeah.
And so this one was Advent 2018 to Epiphany 2024. And then it wasn't, so that's about 5-6 years.
Serious,
and then on top of that, I mean about five and a half.
Plus or minus,
And then on top of that, it took about another year and a half of all the stinking publication stuff. It was really about, excuse me, but it was really about 7 years start to finish to get this book finally in a state that could be touched.
Publishable.
And yeah. So, I mean, and some of that stuff was, you know, like the time was, sometimes it was me not getting my head on straight and not being in the place I needed to be able to hear properly. And other times it was things that weren't in my control. Like the process for the Neil Obstadt took a year.
Yeah.
Almost
yeah.
exactly a year. My cover process took probably 2 years total, start to finish. And a lot of that wasn't necessarily me all waiting, but some of it at the end really was me waiting. And, you know, I mean, like, I tell my cover artist, I said, you know, look, all everything else is done. I'm only waiting for you. Also, I have these things set up that I'm going to need the book for at some point, but I don't want you to feel, I'm telling you this so that you know, but not because I want you to feel rushed. I want you to make sure that you can spend the time that you need to get your eyes and ears on right. I mean, the cover is beautiful.
I do like the cover. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. And I remember you shared with us kind of a pre-publication version, you know, and that was a great story. But I love this artwork, and your artist has done a fantastic job.
Oh, she did phenomenally. I mean, I'm almost more excited, more proud to have that particular cover on my book than I am to have the book itself.
Sure.
I mean, it's amazing.
Do you have a favorite story then of the nine? There's nine, right?
Yeah,
nine that are in here.
Nine stories. Yeah. So my favorite story today. Let's see, because it changes constantly. I mean, there's so many. You know, and sometimes it's things that are relevant for the season, right? Like when it comes to like Easter, man, the story of Mary's story of watching Jesus die is always going to be a gut punch for you, right? It's phenomenal. But sometimes, even during Easter, sometimes it's my favorite is actually where Joseph has to do a little bit of carrying of his own. I think most of the time, my favorite story, ironically enough, is The Waiter from Cana. And it's ironic because, of course, I mean, that's not a huge spoiler for the book, but it's the one story of Mary's stories that's not told by Mary.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It's actually told by the waiter. That's right. I forgot that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's that story is the one that, that one wraps up. It helps you understand just how much Jesus loved his mom and his dad, you know, not just that he cared for him because they were the people that raised him, but just how much he actually just wanted to love the crud out of his mom and dad.
Yeah.
And, it makes it so real. And it makes him such a relatable guy too.
Exactly.
He's sitting there playing and joking around with the waiter, you know, like tossing food across the table into his mouth, you know, like
it's a wedding feast.
It's a wedding feast and you're having fun and
feasting.
And you know, I think it actually adds a lot to understanding a lot more about the miracle.
That's
of
exactly
the
what
wine.
I was getting ready to say. What I have discovered reading these stories is that understanding the theological and the scriptural architecture, for lack of a better term, that the church has given us. The church and the Bible have given us.
Yeah,
this helps understand a little bit of that, and understanding that, okay, the waters, the baptism, and yada yada, and the 3 days, and is the 3 days in the grave, and and those the connective tissues that sometimes just reading scripture alone and just reading our catechism alone,
right?
We have to have the smart people, and thank the Lord we have them. To help us make some of those connective tissues.
I'm certainly not smart enough on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the book though ties all that in, and then on top of that, it makes it real, right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Not just that it's the. I mean, it's not. I'm no Scott Hahn, for instance, right? but the book isn't a theological treatise.
It's not supposed to be.
Right, and I'm not a gospel writer, and I'm not going to teach in deep, profound moments of the faith or anything like that. And that's not what the book's supposed to be either. The book is about some real people.
Yeah.
That you just don't have the relationship with that you will after you read that book. Yeah.
Have you written anything else?
Yeah, actually, this was... So, that's my 10th book. The Reader's Theater Edition was my 11th book.
Wow.
I have a 12th one already out. Very few have anything to do with each other. Most of... about half of them, probably, are related to theater or improv, comedy.
So compare writing this story to some of your other.
Oh, this is my first novel.
Yeah,
like this is the first fiction. So it wasn't the first short story that I had published. I had had two short stories published by another publisher in two different anthologies that weren't religious in nature at all. I had some short plays that came out before this. Mm-hmm. That's not really the same thing. And a lot of the time they came out for, there were some technical reasons for why I had those things coming out and different things like that. And this had been started long before that. So this is the first novel that I'd written. It's the first novel I've published. It's not the first fiction that came out, I need help because I have a terribly inspiring and abusive muse that doesn't like me to write about things that, you know, have anything to do with each other. If somebody could help me understand how to write in the same type of genre so I can actually make any money with things, that'd be fantastic. I really need help with that. When I say that I get stuff stuck in my head and it won't get out until I write it down, mm-hmm. that's really what's happening. For lack of a better analogy, this is a terrible analogy, but for lack of a better analogy, it's Tourette's of the hand, of the writer, you know, of the pen, Tourette's of the pen. But overall, the process was more or less the same as everything else. You know, I actually tend to write. The writing itself happens almost always on my phone, or on a tablet, and any mind mapping that gets done. Some of these stories were mind mapped out in advance. Some of them weren't. What's interesting is that all of them are more almost identical to their first draft.
Huh.
All of them.
That's interesting.
I can't write this well. In fact, I've had friends that look like, given friends, a few friends copies that, you know, weren't even necessarily Catholic, wouldn't mm-hmm. know about it, things like that. And my best man for my wedding, he was mm-hmm. like, yeah, it sounds a lot like you, but it's written better. I said, well,
I think
here's the deal, right? I had the titles in the order before I started writing the stuff. Yeah. The stories in the book can be read in three different orders.
That's why I wanted to ask you. So, because as I was reading it, the first time you gave me the mm-hmm. you know, the early advance copy, that was one of the first things you pointed out is to
read it in Mary's order, is what I say, mm-hmm. which is not in the chapter order. The chapter order is the order they were told around the story or the fire that evening. Mary's order is, for lack of a better description, it's the order that the stories were actually put to pen.
Okay.
And I always recommend that people read it that way. I've seen there's a lot of people seem to have a lot of benefit from reading it in Mary's order first. Mm-hmm. I tell people, hey, you know, read it after that, read it in any order you want. And if somebody really wants to read it in a different order, then I can't stop them and I'm not going to try. But so there's Mary's order, there's the order of the chapters, and then the other one that's really interesting is the order as we go through Jesus' life.
Yeah, chronological.
All the way from his birth, all the way to his death on the cross. None of the stories are after his resurrection. All of the stories have little interludes before them, you know, what happened at the campfire before Mary launched into the story, and they reference, you know, the tone of the last story or things like this. And, you know, you can read it in any of the three orders and all of the interludes work almost exactly as well, mm-hmm. no matter which. I don't write this well. Yeah. I don't write this well. I spent a lot of time praying and I'm not going to claim anything on this. Mm. I'm not going to claim, just like I wouldn't claim that it's, you know, the gospel according to Mary. I wouldn't claim that I have some sort of, you know, magical revelation from Mary on the books. That's not what I'm saying. Where I stop at the point where I say, I can't write this well. So you draw your own conclusions at that point.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that it stops at the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. So is there a part two?
Maybe
down the road.
It would be hard to do a part two if you know how Wedding at Cana ends.
Well, that's exactly right. That's a great point. That's a great point.
You're not going to, I don't want to spoil that.
There you go.
That is 100% a reason that you should read the book. That is it's one of the reasons that, it's what happens at the end of Wedding of Cana is one of my things. That's one of my favorite parts about the book. Yeah. It's one of the reasons that story is usually my favorite story. Yeah. Again, it changes on a day-to-day basis, on a seasonal basis.
So as we're talking about, where can folks get it? Where is this available? Where is Mary's Stories available?
The easy way is to get it on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's up there. It's $9. What I will tell you that you should probably do is swing by St. Mary's and pick up a copy there, or it's a penny cheaper, and it supports local Catholic business.
There you go.
The Magnificat Center that they've got there is open every day except Monday. I haven't gotten a chance to talk over here to Janice, but I'm hoping that Mary's Stories will be here at Christ the King also soon.
Okay.
But You know, and I'd love to get into some of the other stores at the around the deanery at least.
Sure.
But the you know, I have a life that I have to lead, and it's hard to do this.
And you're not a traveling roadshow.
I'm not. I'm not just a book salesman. It's not my. It's not my calling. No, the funny thing about it is that one of the things that I love about this book is that I feel like it's probably the most important thing that I'll ever write. Mm. And on the one hand, you know, it's easy to go, well, that's kind of depressing. That's the, you know, you've peaked. Yeah. I'm like, oh, no, are you kidding me? I just did the only, like, the most important thing I needed to do. Are you kidding me how freeing that is? Yeah, oh, my gosh. Yeah. To sit there and feel like you might have done the thing that God most needed you for, and now you just get to spend your life promoting that thing, unfortunately. But that's a different thing, and that's a different job, and, you know, that'll happen. But so, yeah, now I get to spend the rest of my life promoting this book. Yeah. But the bright side is, you know, hey, I've just done the, you know, most important thing that I've, that, you know,
wonderful.
Like, so, I mean, that's just, it's a really cool
thing. So you can go to Amazon, mm-hmm. which ironically started as a bookstore.
Yep.
Or you can go over to St. Mary's in Temple.
Yep.
And the Magnificat Center, which is actually right across the street from the church.
Yep.
Pick up a copy there and support the Magnificat Center.
I'll eventually have links.
Eventually,
up on my
we'll
website,
get them in the other churches, and
hopefully, know. Yeah. I mean, I could say you go to freakingawesomebooks.com, but I'm not sure that I have the Amazon links updated on the website yet. So it's
okay. Freakingawesomebooks.com. We'll make sure to put a link.
That's my self-publishing brand.
In our show notes, then. That's interesting. Publishing brand, but okay. That's the way it goes.
That's because all the books are freaking awesome.
Yeah, Mike, thanks very much for coming and joining us here, and we appreciate your efforts. We appreciate your fiat in responding to writing this book. And I really encourage folks to go get it. Doesn't matter where you get it. It would be better to get it at St. Mary's and Temple. But just get it, read it, enjoy it, share it, buy multiple copies, use them as stocking stuffers.
Yeah.
It's getting close to Christmas time. So
if you love someone, buy them a copy. If you hate someone, buy them two.
There you go. God bless, brother. Thank you very much for your time. Oh, and
thank you.
Remember,
you guys have been huge fans of this book since long before it came out. I really appreciate
it. It is freaking awesome.
See, that's why. And you tell me it's a weird brand.
All right, brother. God bless, man, and thank you very much.
Thank you.